time. Okay. So just to get back in the swing of things, because I think last week we were off, so to speak. So our new topic, or it's not new anymore, is Hakshar Kalim, meaning how we take a certain kli that might have become treif and hopefully get it over to where it should be to be kasher. And we discussed last time, just to refresh everybody's memory, just to clean myself, one source, one of the sources for Hakshar Kalim is the source that we discussed before by Tefilas Kalim. That is the war in Midian. Obviously, Klal Yisrael comes back. So they're going to have certain Kalim, which they took as spoils from the war from Mr. and Mrs. Midian. So those were obviously not kosher. The other source, if you recall, was by the Korban Chatos. And through that, we discovered or discussed a concept, and that is, since this is kosher concepts, and that is that if I have this kli, which this is, so it's not only what I see, which is what we call be'en, like ayin, what you see, but there's also absorption. Now, we've discussed this previously. We saw it graphically with Mrs. Krombach's experiment, that there's not only what you can make this perfectly clean, at least seemingly perfectly clean, but there's something absorbed inside. There's stuff absorbed inside the walls of this kli. Well, who cares about that? I care about it, because now when I use this kli to process something kosher, that stuff, that taste that's absorbed inside this kli is not going to come out, and it's going to come into my kosher food. So, as we discussed last time, that there are two things that we look at when we're discussing Hakshar Kalim. First of all, is the material. We discussed previously what the kli is made out of, what material is it made out of. We have a wide range on the spectrum. So, for example, we see that by Midyan is discussed, just mentioning it, it's discussed about metals. So things are any type of metal, metallic things, gold, silver, iron, those type of things can be koshered, and the Torah tells us how to do it. Also by Korban Chatos, the discussion there is when you use a bronze or a copper kli, again, metallic. So then we kosher it in a certain way. We'll get to that. So those type of kelim you could kosher. On the other hand, we see from Korban Chatos that the Torah says if the vessel that's used to cook the Korban Chatos, and again, just to refresh everyone's memory, the problem with Korban Chatos is if I cook the Korban Chatos in here, so now there's Korban Chatos absorption inside the walls of this kli. I got to take care of that. That's because that's going to come out to my other food. So now this kli, which is used to cook the Korban Chatos, which is cheres, so the Torah says it has to be destroyed. It has to be broken. Cheres we usually define as pottery, china, ceramic, enamel, those type of things. So on the other hand, the other end of the spectrum, on this other side, is vessels made out of cheres type of materials. So those cannot be kosher. How about stuff in the middle? How about glass? So we discussed that there's a machlokas by glass. Can it be kosher? Can it not? We have this by Hilchos Pesach. We have this machlokas in a number of places where koshering something would obviously be an issue. Now again, as I mentioned I think last time, here by a Hakshar Kalim, we're not only talking about kosher to treif, but bear in mind that we are also talking about Chametz to Pesach. Chametz to Pesach. Sometimes we'll be more machmir by Chametz to Pesach for obvious reasons, because Pesach more than treif to kosher. So again, you have to bear that in mind. So the first issue that we touched upon last time was we look at the nature of the kli. So again, that will be one of the first things that a rav has to think about, or an individual has to think about. That is, what is the kli made out of that I want to or attempt to kosher? Made of metal? Okay. Is made out of cheres? Not good. Is made out of glass? Okay. Now, you have to understand there's other variables also to bear in mind. We touched on some of those last time. How fragile the kli is. If a kli is very fragile, so then we're scared that if you won't kosher it well. Something that comes up quite often, another consideration is and I think I mentioned this last time, and that is if the kli has a lot of holes, like a colander, or something like that. So if it has a lot of holes, so then we're scared you won't clean it well, or it cannot be cleaned well, right? And now again, when we talk about kashering, we'll talk about this again. Usually when we talk about kashering, we're talking about absorption. Remember, be'en, belia. Talking about belia, we're not talking about be'en. Usually when we're talking about tangible trait, we're assuming you washed that away, you scrubbed it off, you got rid of that. Our main focus is what's absorbed inside. If you take a kli and there's actual pig on it, and you put it in a, you kasher it, we'll see. You kasher it, let's say, using hot boiling water, which we'll get to. So then, what happens? Nothing. You still have pig on it. That doesn't help. So we're assuming you got rid of what's seen, what's tangible. We're just attacking what's absorbed inside. Okay? So last week, I think we ended off with the different ways we could kasher. The first way to kasher is hadacha, meaning you just wash it off. We discussed that case. In other words, all that hadacha does is take care of the be'en, the tangible. So whatever is tangible, it washes it off. And again, the important thing to remember by that is that hadacha is a way of kashering something. For what? If there's no belia, meaning nothing is absorbed inside. So we discussed many cases like that, I think last time. That is, I think the stuffed cabbage case I discussed last time. That is, if the kli was used for cold. You had stuffed cabbage, and in that case we were talking about, stuffed cabbage was cool. It was put into a milchik Tupperware. So then what do? Wash it off. Right? Wash off the stuffed cabbage from the milchik Tupperware. Anything happen? Not really yet. It's just a be'en problem. Since there was no heat, nothing was absorbed inside. Absorption only results from heat. Heat. So if there was no heat present, so then what? So then nothing got absorbed inside. So it's a superficial issue. That is taken care of by washing it away with cool water, soapy cool water. Okay? The next thing we went on to is the next order. So that was hadacha. And then we also discussed hagala. Okay? Hagala, if you recall, is we talked about the rule of kibol kachbalto. The way you get in is the way you get it out. So if I have a kli, and as we have here, this kli is used with a liquid. There's a liquid inside here, believe it or not, even though you might not be able to see it. So now if I heated up this thing and the liquid was trace, so now I got trace absorbed inside the walls of this spritz bottle, right? Everybody following me so far? So now I have to get rid of that. I have to get that out. How do I get it out? Answer is, the rule is the way you got in is the way you get it out. So I got the trafe taste in with hot water, hot liquid. So how am I going to get it out? Same way. So what do? So as we discussed last time, I let this sit for 24 hours. We discussed why. Because midoraisa, something that's tangible could last forever, potentially. But absorption only, technically, midoraisa from the Torah only lasts for 24 hours. So I let it sit for 24 hours. Now again, there's less of a problem of the absorption because the absorption is weakened. And what I do, I take this. Now we're assuming it's cleaned, right? We assume there's no be'en. And I take this and I put it into a pot of hot boiling water. The pot also hasn't been used within 24 hours. The pot that I'm kashering in, hopefully is clean, or it better be clean. And it's hot boiling water. And it doesn't make a difference if it's milchik or fleishik. And you'll understand why in a second, or hopefully you do already. And I put this in the hot boiling water. I leave it in there enough time for it to get hot. A few seconds, not too long, 10, 20 seconds. Then you take it out, rinse it off with cold water. What did I accomplish? Simple. The hot boiling water is potter, right? There's no taste to it. So now what happened when I submerge this into the hot boiling water? The pig comes out, pig taste comes out, and then the hot boiling water taste goes in. Presto changeo, this is kosher now, right? The absorption, the trace absorption that was inside, I have now done what? It's important to remember, replaced it through the heat of the water. That's what I've done. Everybody following? Good. So I think what we left off last time, so what did I accomplish? When you think about it. Because if you're following what I'm saying so far, so now the pig tastes where to go? Into the hot water. But wait, that's hot water. So I have now pig water in my pot. So now I might have kashered this, but what I do, apparently what I've done, I have chafed up my pot. That's what I've accomplished. I mean, we're assuming that you want to use the pot again. So I kashered the spray bottle by chafed up the pot. So what does that do? Yes, Mr. Shrinker.
I'm sorry. The question about the pot being anal and yellow.
Right.
Is that because if the kli that you're kashering would become, but if the kli is flay shakes or it's supposed to be flay shakes and the pot is flay shakes, does that need to be anal and yellow?
Everything should always be anal and yellow.
The pot that you
kasher in and the thing you are kashering.
Even if the thing you're kashering is to be the same as the pot.
Correct. Still the way you should do it. And the reason is because you never know. You mix things up. So we always tell people, always use eno ben yomo. Something, eno ben yomo once again, means it hasn't been used within 24 hours. Clean hasn't been used within 24 hours. Because you can mix things up. Right? In other words, this time you're right. Technically, there's no problem. But policy-wise, it's not a good idea.
Also because you might find something else that you want to...
That's right. Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, people lose track. People, you see that, we're worried about that in Halakha and a lot of different areas. Okay, so now, again, let's get back to the question of, good, I kashered the little thing, but I chafed up my pot, right? A couple answers to that. And I think one we touched on last time, and that is, that's why we say use a lot of water, right? So in other words, hopefully there's a lot of water, so it's 60 times the surface area of this of the spray bottle. Now the most blia, the most absorption that's in here is if the whole surface area of the spray bottle is completely saturated with pig. Can't be more than that, right? So even if you assume that, if I have 60, you guesstimate, right? You have to, you know, just guess this. That if my water, the hot water, is 60 times this area, so then when the water when the pig comes out of the spray bottle into the water, it's bottle, right? It's 1 in 60. So that's one answer. One answer is that it's 1 in 60. And most people like to do that. They like to have a lot of water. That's why you'll see that the kashering pots we have in shul that we use, Pesach time, whatever, they're humongous. They're humongous usually for a technical reason. As people sometimes have to kasher something very big, so you know, you gotta get it in there. So that's true. But another reason is because we want a lot of hot water.
I thought for Pesach that a 60th doesn't hold.
It doesn't on Pesach, but before Pesach, the chametz is not usser, it's not a problem. So before Pesach, it's batal, 1 in 60. It's on Pesach itself. It's a mashahu. It's an infinitesimal amount. So you're right. Let's say if you're kashering something on Pesach,
you can't.
Yeah, that's a different problem. Okay. The other reason why this is not a problem, and again, this is an argument, is exactly for what the reason I said it. It's not a problem. In other words, point two, there is a word. Well, it's not a word really. There's a Rosh Tevos that we use. Can I explain this also? Yeah, I just hinted on it. Not stands for no sein tam. No sein tam is something that gives taste. No sein tam. No sein tam is something that gives taste, as opposed to, in other words, it's taste, as opposed to be'en, something that you can actually see. So in other words, just think of it this way. In other words, if you have a piece of pig, obviously that piece of pig, that be'en, has a lot more trafing power than taste, than just something that's absorbed, right? Anything absorbed inside the walls of this kli is obviously much weaker than having an actual piece of bacon, right? So now, what happens? So as we said, this whatever's absorbed inside of this kli that I'm going to kasher, First of all, it says absorption. So that's one strike, if you want to call it that. It's not actual pig, it's just absorption. Number two is, don't forget what we said, it's waited for 24 hours. So we know midaraisa, as I mentioned before, from the Torah, the taste is already soured. The taste is already weakened. Now what are we going to do? So now let's go slow motion. What are we going to do? We're taking this absorption that's inside here, we're putting it into water. Okay? So it's just absorption, not to minimize, and it's weakened because it hasn't been used for 24 hours. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to put it into hot water. What's going to happen? So now the pig taste comes out, and the water taste comes in. Now where do the pigs go? Into the water. Is that a problem? Not really, because the whole problem is once they go from the water into my pot. Right? They can stay in the water. I don't care. But the problem is going to be when they go into the pot. Right? So now, what is that? What is that? So it's what we call a not bar not. It's taste, the son of a taste. That's why I used to tell the girls in Beis Yaakov, and I told you this before, at the end of the last time, it's not a problem. Why? It's a halacha pun there. Because it's taste. And so it's taste that's absorbed in here. Where is it going? Into the water. Then what? Then it's going into the pot. And it's weak in taste. It already hasn't been used for 24 hours. That far, it cannot go.
But the heat awakens taste.
No. Well, that's a separate issue. If it would... You're right, some people don't hold this, but in general we pass in this way, that it's just not strong enough to go that far. You have to realize there's a difference of opinion between the two reasons. If you say not bar not, so then even if I don't have that much water, right, it's still okay. If you say the first reason has to be 60 times, so then I have to have 60 times in order to be mavatala. And as I mentioned last time, where you get into a slight issue is if you're koshering a lot of things. So then how many pigs do you got in the... The answer is, yeah, but it's very weak. It hasn't been used in 24 hours. And it's only taste, and it's so far removed. So that's the issue.
So they're not strong enough to fall back into the...
They're not strong enough to go that far. That's basically a lot of times what we hold. Okay, now... So that's Haggalah. Okay, and then again, there's a minhag to wash it off after we put it into the hot water, to wash it off with cold water. There's such an opinion. If bedieved, and you should do that, you should wash it off with cold water afterwards. Bedieved, you do it. Most poskim say it's okay. Now, unlike tefilas kelim, hechsher kelim could be done halvesies, meaning if you recall, by tefilas kelim, everything has to be under the water simultaneously. You can't do half of it and flip it over and do the other half. By Hakshar Kalim, we do this. Now, this is very convenient because if you don't have a big enough pot or something like that, so you could do half, and then do the other half, just so obviously you have to make sure the entire surface gets kashered, right? Okay. Now, let's go on to the third. You'll see why I'm leaving a gap in a second. The third type of kashering is called libun. Libun, like from the word lavan. You get it white. Now again, let's just go back to the concept. Remember, the way it gets in is the way it gets out. So this spray bottle, the reason why we kashered with hot boiling water was because it became trafe through a liquid. Right? The liquid, I don't know how, but let's say the liquid was trafe. So then the liquid got into was the medium which was used to get the trafe taste into the walls of the kli, so I'm going to have to use liquid to replace it. But let's say that wasn't the case. Let's say, for example, you trafed up a barbecue, or a frying pan, or I don't know what else, something like that. In other words, something that the trafe got in through no liquid. Now, I don't want to talk about if you put a small amount of oil, a small amount or small amount of margarine, because that's a machlokas whether that small amount is considered a liquid or if that's enough to make a liquid or now you, but again, the idea is that if you got the treif in, how? By a fire, no liquid, but the treif just got in through a fire, so then what? You have to use fire to get it out. So let's say I had a barbecue, and the barbecue, made a mistake, and reached for the kosher hot dogs, and somehow I got the Farmer John hot dogs, and I wasn't watching, and I put down the grill, right, and it chafed it up, right? So now what I do with the barbecue? What are you going to say? Oh, take the koshering pot and get hot water and kosher that way. Well, that won't work, because remember the rule is kibbol kakpoto. The way you got it is the way you got it out. So how did I get it in this way, this time? I got in through fire. So how am I going to get it out? Fire. Same thing. So what I have to do, again, today we have blow torches, and which again, you should be very careful using. Don't, unless you really know what you're doing, don't use that. Get a professional to do it. But basically, you need a fire medium to get the treif out. Well, that's wrong, really. It's not really to get the treif out. That's one of the things I want to touch upon. See, here, for number one, hadacha, we're just washing the treif away because nothing got absorbed inside. Number two is we are replacing the treif. Because what are we worried about? Absorption. Number three, if you use a blowtorch or use heat, now again, you don't have to use a blowtorch, you can use coals, right? You can use whatever. But if you use heat, so let's say, let's say this is a grill, right? Let's say this is a grill, and I want to kosher it. So I got pig inside here, so what do? I use heat, I use a blowtorch. And I get this very, very hot. How hot? Lavan. I get a white hot. That's very hot, right? With a blowtorch. If you come before Pesach, so you see we have this huge blowtorch, right? A really scary. You really gotta know what you're doing. Now the reason why we use that blowtorch mainly is for a different reason. We use that blowtorch because, as I mentioned, for Hagola, for number two, you have to keep the water hot. You have to keep it boiling. So you know everybody keeps on, well not people, but the mashgiach keeps on putting in vessels into there. So what happens? So obviously the water gets cold. Once the water goes below boiling, it's not hot enough for hagol anymore. So we have to keep the water hot. We have to keep the water boiling. How do you keep a big pot of water boiling? How do you do that? Answer is, mashgiachim will tell you, you have this big scary industrial strength blowtorch. You keep it on and it has the flame hitting the side. You'll see, if you ever borrow our koshering pots, you'll see on the side they're black. And this, they call it a wee whacker, but not like the string one. It's a scary thing. So, but that's evidently what they use it for when they have, lots that are undeveloped and there's weeds. So they just go around singeing. I don't know, scary stuff. But anyways, so we use that blowtorch as an industrial blowtorch to hit against the side of the walls of the pot to keep the pot boiling, right? But what we sometimes use it for is if somebody wants libun to be done. Now obviously that thing, that blowtorch does a really good job of libun. Can imagine, or maybe you can't. It's a scary thing when that thing really gets going. So again, what do? You get it white hot. Now what happens when I make this grill white hot? What's the concept here? Am I replacing? What am I doing to the pigs inside? Right, I'm incinerating them. I'm incinerating the pigs. I know the pita people won't like that, though. But I'm incinerating the pigs inside. Now, see, that's very important because in concept, it's different than number two. It's different than hagol. Hagol, I'm replacing the taste. With libun, I'm not replacing nothing. I'm burning up those pigs inside. Now that's important for another reason besides concept. And that is, let's say you're having a, whatever it is, some type of simcha, having a bar mitzvah, let's just use that as a very rare example. So, and you're having a George Bush bar mitzvah, so you're having a, you know, a barbecue with the 10-gallon hats and everything. So all of a sudden you realize, you know, I got kosher the grills. So, you know, it's Sunday and you I don't know, you didn't wait 24 hours. So if you recall by Haggadah, you have to wait 24 hours, and we explain why, right? Because the taste coming out and everything. But let's say you don't want to do Haggadah. Let's say you want to do Libun. So do you have to wait 24 hours? No. You don't have to wait 24 hours. Why? Because you're burning up those pigs inside. It doesn't. There's no reason to wait. I mean, you could wait 24 hours, but you don't have to, because you're burning them up. It doesn't make a difference. Now, I'm probably going to say this, right? Now we get into where the gap is and where the phone rings. And that is to be or not to be. That's a lamed. I know it doesn't look like that, but now you can understand something else. We have really another way to kasher. That's called libun kal, libun light. Less filling. So what does that mean? In other words, by regular libun, by a grill, the only way you could kasher it is with a blowtorch and getting it really white hot, really hot. Well, let's say this. Let's say I have something that really I have to do Haggadah on. I'll give you an example. Let's say I have a soup pot. Now, again, let's leave Teflon and Silverstone, no coatings. Let's leave out the coatings issue, right? It's a regular pot. A pot, right? Not a frying pan or anything like that. A pot. And became treif. So how do you kasher it? Simple. Haggadah. Okay. But let's say I've got... It's within 24 hours, and I need it. I need to kasher it. So I don't have the 24 hours to wait to do Haggadah. So you know what you could do? Libun kal. You could do libun. You could take a blowtorch and burn out those piggies, but you don't have to get it as hot, right? By something that is a grill that needs libun, because that's the way you got it in, and that's the way you're going to get it out. So you need to get it white hot. But let's say, really, what I have to do to this kli is really Haggadah. But either I don't have time, or you're a pyromaniac, or something like that, right? You want to stay away from hot water, and you'd rather stick with fire. Or, you know, or it could be you're koshering the grill. So once you got the blowtorch out already, you might as well take care of the pot, right? I'm going to go through it. So if you're koshering something that really could use Haggadah, but for whatever reason you're using a blowtorch, so then you don't need libun, what we call libun gomor, you don't need complete libun, but rather you just need libun light. What's the difference? The difference is how hot you get it. How hot you get it. With, let's say, a grill, you have to get white hot, which is very hot. With something, let's say that soup pot, again, without the coatings, so all you have to get it is hot. How much is hot? So we say you have to make it hot enough that if you would take a piece of straw or something like that and touch it to whatever you're koshering, it would get singed. So that's not too, I mean, it's hot. It's pretty hot. But it's not like red hot. Okay? Again, so that's something very important to remember, because, again, if you have a blowtorch, or you're more comfortable with a blowtorch, or whatever the case may be. So instead of doing Haggadah on something, you could just do Libun. Now this is important for another reason too. Because I think before we discussed, or we might have touched on, ovens. How do you kosher an oven? Didn't we touch upon that like a while ago? A long time ago. So anyways, so there's a big question about how do you kosher an oven. So I might have mentioned, I'm not sure if I did, that obviously the best thing is if you have a self-cleaning oven. What's the idea behind a self-cleaning oven? A self-cleaning oven means it gets so hot, it gets really hot, that's libun. You actually do libun to the entire surface of the inside of the oven. And that's the best thing, whether you're talking about Pesach, you're talking about Melchizedek, whatever, kosher treif, whatever. But see, what sometimes people do is, once they're cleaning the oven, they're self-cleaning the oven and kashering it or whatever, they put something else inside there, excuse me, which they need to be kashered, and it will get kashered too. Now, that could be a little dangerous, like if you put a pot in there. Let's say, again, the soup pot became treif. So you could put the soup pot in there. Now, you have to take off the handles because the handles are plastic, and that could be toxic if you leave something plastic in the oven that hot. That literally could have toxic fumes, and besides the fact that the handles will get ruined. So that's besides the point. But again, let's say you have a barbecue grate that you want to kosher, so you can put in the self-cleaning oven.
It actually gets white hot in there.
It gets very hot.
It's
supposed to be like 800 degrees, which is what we say. Liban Gomer is like 800-850
degrees. That's white?
Yeah, well, see, again, a lot of times you don't see it get white hot. Sometimes we have this problem koshering in the back. Let's say when you have, I think it was last year or the year before, I don't remember what it was, somebody had a cast iron, forgot what. So no matter what you do, it's not going to get white hot. It will get hot. I mean, it will get very hot. But it's not like, you know, it starts to glow or anything. So, but it gets very hot. It's just you don't see it. Just because the metal, the type of metal. So again, the mashgiach has to know, you know, what am I dealing with? If it gets that hot, it's just not glowing, so then it's that hot.
Is there a test like with the straw on the other
No.
one?
No, it just, when it gets that degree.
With the self-cleaning oven, the food residue is white.
Really? When and after it's
white.
Done?
When you open the oven afterwards, it's a gray-white ash. So it actually does turn.
That doesn't really prove that much,
but
because,
it
incinerates it. The question is, with something that's metal, what would happen inside? See, they do say, I think, that this is what the companies say, that you shouldn't leave the grates
right.
in there because they'll get singed.
You lose the shine.
The shine, right.
Yeah, they do, and they don't fit quite as well afterwards.
Right.
They're like warped.
They get so hot.
Yeah.
It gets really, really, really,
I
really hot.
I always save the great zone.
Yeah.
No, my wife
always
uses the great zone also.
Yeah, but they're warped.
Right, they're warped. But it gets really hot. I mean, you could feel how it's really hot. The only thing that I felt that was ever hotter is, you know, when I've been around matzah ovens. Matzah ovens are
kilns
nasty.
Are hotter. Kilns are hotter because my kiln goes to
more than a matzah?
2,200 degrees.
I wonder how much a matzah...
Matzah ovens are around 900.
Really? I would think it's more because they're so big and they're brick. You know, it's scary.
So would using a kiln be an option for Liban then?
Yeah, oh, for sure. You've done it, no? Haven't you?
Yeah.
They're scary.
By
you have to know what you're doing.
When you get over 1,100 degrees is when you can see heat. So when you look at the sun, it's white hot because it's like 3,000 degrees, what we see. But when you look into a kiln at 1,100 degrees, it's a dull red. And when you get up to 2,000 degrees, it's an orange. And when you get to 2,300 degrees, you're at white heat. So, but you don't have to get that
right.
hot.
Yeah, you don't have to get that hot. Right.
It's not, the term would seem to imply that that's what we're aiming for, the white.
Right. But again, it's usually like 850 degrees. Usually that's what we're shooting for. Okay, so that's...
What's the difference in color then between Liban Kal and Liban
Mosh? Well, with Liban Kal, you're not going to really even see anything. You're not going to even see anything. It just has to be hot enough that if I took a tissue or something, this would singe. Which is, it's hot. It's very hot. But it's not anywhere near Liban Gomer. It's not anywhere near that. By the way, Liban Kal is another, another practical application of Liban Kal would be, again, when something needs Hagala, but maybe it's a big pot, right? So it's like, I don't have a pot big enough to stick this into something, right? I don't have a big enough pot to this is too big for me to cash. So what would be the answer? There's two ways. One is, again, Liban Kal. You do a blowtorch job on it, a light blowtorch job on it. The other way is you're probably familiar, and that is you leave it for 24 hours, and then you boil up water, and then you put the hot brick in, and it explodes and, you know, overflows. And, you know, again, you don't want to do this at home unless you really, really, really know what you're doing. And, again, I want to make it very clear that if anybody does any of these things and something happens, it's not my responsibility. Okay? Okay, any questions on the three?
What's the difference in temperature? I'm still confused between 2B and
3. 2B and 3, there's a big difference.
What temperature are we aiming for in each one?
2B, I don't think it's that much.
If you're trying to send paper singes at Fahrenheit 451, that's why the book was called that.
Oh, really?
That's what
it's half the, so then it's about half the degrees.
So 800 is the other one?
850, 800, yeah. Half the degree.
And then when we're doing Libon either Kal or Gomor, then it's basically taking the torch and just going over every single.
Right. See, that's what Rav Moshe writes is the problem. He holds in order to kasher a oven, you need Libon Gomor. You need real Libon. Now, again, when the Tshuva was written, they didn't have self-pleating ovens, I don't think.
But it's every spot just going over.
Right. So that, according to Rav Moshe, that would be the technical problem. Technical problem of blow torturing. Well, not really. You see, what you could do is, again, one of these things that we have, those industrial weed burner thingies, that would do it, maybe. But see, you have to realize, if you do that, it would, on your oven, it would probably destroy the thermostat. That amount of heat. Don't forget, how high does your oven go? 500, 550? This is like mass. This is a lot. Could easily blow out a thermostat. So you have to be careful with that. I mean, that's what Mashgichim tell me. So again, that's why we're lucky that we have self-cleaning ovens, that they're made to do that. And again, you have to be, I think I mentioned this last time, you have to be careful when you use an oven, self-cleaning oven, because the igniter will go out much more quickly. Like I could tell you in our oven, I don't even know how many times we replaced it.
It's like a 6-month
thing. We've replaced it a number of times because Pesach and, you know, sometimes you kosher the oven and so, you know, that's a side issue.
What's an igniter? It's a $150 part that the guy comes and puts in all the time. It's what makes the, with the ovens that don't have pilots anymore, they have
electronic
this
ignition.
Electronic thing that gets hot, and then it allows the gas through. And it's sort of like a cigarette lighter kind of heat.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have an electric, so I don't know.
If you have a gas,
I have a gas oven.
Then you haven't.
So
well,
not,
then you're lucky.
And self-cleaning.
Yeah. Then you're lucky. One day your oven will. One day
just
your oven will.
Usually Erev Shabbos.
Or
Erev Yantzev. Right, that's what happens to us all the time.
Your oven would go on and then it wouldn't go on again,
so
your food would be like not cooking.
Yeah, well, it just made to ignite
in
that high.
Oven, right.
The number
if
of
it
times.
Go on, right.
Then it will
the
not it will
right.
not work.
You notice it, like you're cooking something and it's been in there for 2 hours
and
it's still not done.
I can't even. I don't can't even remember how many
every
times.
Every oven
have.
Has the same.
But usually
it
happens
that
on Erev Shabbos.
So
I remember it happening on Erev Shabbos that we had to pan make everything pan roasted.
Yes, that's when I went out and bought a pan roast.
Yeah. Okay. Just to finish this. Just to finish again, there are other. There are, these are the main ways that we kosher things. Now, I mentioned last time that there's minor ways, meaning not, I don't want to say normative, but these are the ways that we usually kosher something. Now, there are exceptional ways, let me put it that way. I think I mentioned about nitsa bakarkas or pamim, that you stick something in the ground and you put it in the ground and you pull it in and out 10 times. Again, we don't use that because, again, that only works for surface things, like grimy, gloppy surface stuff, and you can't get the end trait because it's grimy. So if you stick it into ground, it will shear off the coarseness of the ground, will take off whatever the grimy trait is on there will take off. Again, we don't do that. I can't think of it today. When I was a kid, used to, like I said, people misused this idea. They didn't understand the idea, and you saw people sticking things in the ground and leaving it there. And but again, now you understand the concept. That only helps for surface stuff. There's also, I think we touched upon this, miloi ve'iru gimel pamim, which is what we use by glass. Again, when we discussed glass, I think I touched upon this, that there is an opinion, it's brought down by Hilchos Pesach, that if you have glass, so again, the idea is usually glass we use for cold, for the obvious reason, that is if you use glass for hot, it will shatter, which I think I mentioned by Hagolah. If you're koshering glass and you go according to that opinion, you do Hagolah, you take glass and you put it in hot boiling water, the danger of that is when you take the glass and you immerse it into hot boiling water, it could shatter. Glass, that's why we have ceramic. Ceramic for tea, ceramic for coffee, because it's a more durable material as far as heat is concerned. You drop it on the floor, then we're not talking about that. But ceramic is a more durable as far as heat is concerned. So just parenthetically, one of the tricks, now I'm not guaranteeing it will work, but if you do want to do Hagolah on glass, one of the tricks you could use is put the glass into your oven and put the oven onto 200 degrees, and the oven will bring up gradually the heat up to 200 degrees. Then you take it out and then you put it into the hot boiling water. Don't forget the hot boiling water is 212. So now the glass, so we all know glass is cold. So you take a glass and it's cold and you put it into hot boiling water, the glass will go, right? Well, it won't do that, but you know it's the same type of idea. The shock of the change in temperature could cause it to crack. If you warmed up the glass in an oven gradually, which is what an oven does, so then it's less likely when you now, obviously you can't let it sit for a little while, but if right after you take it out of the oven you put it into the hot boiling water, it's less likely that it will shatter. It still might, so in other words, I'm not taking any responsibility if it does, but it's less likely. So again, if you should speak to a rav before you, what cases you could do Hagolah, or do you need to do Hagolah on glass, but if so, so that would be a trick how to do it. Now the other opinion is usually we use glass for cold for the reasons I mentioned before. So then there's an opinion that says, brought down by Hilchos Pesach, that how you can kosher your glass, again, even for Pesach. We normally don't do this, is you take a glass, it's clean, you submerge it in water, then you leave it underwater for 24 hours, then you drain out the water, get new water, fill it up again for another 24 hours, we're up to 48, and let's sit there another 24 hours, drain out the water, new water again, another 24 hours, or up to 72 hours, then after doing that, filling it up and draining it three times, so then that's 72 hours altogether, so now the glass is kosher. Now we usually don't do that today because it is a leniency, it is brought down, it's a legitimate leniency, but again, you know, if you could buy glass, it's easier not to rely upon that. Some people still do this. So again, you have to realize that's a minor way. Sometimes we kosher, but it only works for glass, right? You can't take your barbecue and put it into your bathtub, let it sit there for 24 hours, drain out the water, another 24 hours, drain out the water. Again, now hopefully you understand the concept. The whole reason is that, again, with glass, we assume it's cold. And so how trafe did it get? You know, so therefore we could kosher it with cold water for 72 hours. Okay, fine. Again, you have to change the water every 24 hours. But something that got actual trafe in it through fire, you can't kosher that through cold water. It doesn't work. Okay? Now, last thing I want to talk about is probably the most famous one, at least in this crowd. The most famous not one of these type of kosherings. Yeah.
I'm sorry, did you say that Leibun Gomer has to be, for anything that needs Leibun or Pesach, would have to be Leibun Gomer?
Not necessarily, no. Again, if it's a pot and somebody wants to use the weed whacker, so we would do that. Well, forget that. Very likely. Let's say you have a stock pot, right? It's a big pot. Again, it will probably fit into one of our kashering pots. But let's say for whatever reason, we could do liban on it. We wouldn't have to get it 850 degrees. We could just get it singe the paper degrees.
A frying pan, if somebody was trying to kasher a frying pan.
Yeah, so
it
had to be liban gomer.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, see with a frying pan, there's side issues about coating. Okay, well, let's say it's not coated. Then you have also, you have to worry about the handle because probably plastic on it, you know, things like that. You know, there's like side issues, which I'm not even covering, right?
The pot also, if you bring a pot for Pesach, people take the handles off and bring them. Why are the handles okay?
They're not necessarily. It depends on the case. You're right sometimes. Yeah.
Well, when people put a blowtorch on the handles, if they would do that for a pot,
yeah.
Does that have to be labeled
no more? It depends. Usually we want to do the whole pot labeling. But see, the handles are a big problem because they're plastic. So it depends on the case. During the year, we wouldn't be as machmir. Right. In other words, what we're worried about is where the handle comes, is screwed onto the, so is there a pig hiding in there? Where we see that's a big problem is, let's say, by knives. People every year bring a knife that has a blade and the blade stuck into the handle. It's not a one-piece knife. It's not like a stainless silver knife, you know, that's just one piece. Rather, it's a knife, has a wooden handle, and the wooden handle, the blade is stuck in. So that's usually a big problem. We don't kosher those things for Pesach, because there might be chametz hiding inside there. It's sort of like a colander issue. You're not going to see us kashering a colander for Pesach. Okay, you want to blowtorch it, maybe, but that might be history. You know, probably, you know, colander won't survive that. So, I mean, Baruch Hashem, we live in a country where, again, a lot of times when it comes to kashering something, especially today, we're more machmir on it. Like, for example, the milu v'iru gimel pami, you don't see people doing that much. Why? Because you could get glass. You know, go to 99-cent store and get 99 pieces of glass for 99 cents. So use that for Pesach, you know. So again, you know, usually people could afford that. It's a one-time investment, you know. Buy once and you have it for, you know. I mean, can I know, a couple years ago, I went to Costco. Even, I don't know, a number of years ago, I never would have thought of such a thing. Now can I know, go to Costco. And for my mother, it's like, you know, I bought her a Pesach microwave. So you pack up the condensed microwave into the garage, bring out a Pesach microwave. Fine, no problem. $50, you know, well, it's a big deal. So, you know, like, Pesach.
They're only used for, like, at most 4 days, though.
I know. But, you know, coffee for 4 days is a, you know, important thing, right? You know, most people, they could today, $50, you buy a microwave and then have a Pesach. So why kosher it? Why do you have to kosher it? And, you know, obviously if a person can't afford it, so it might be a different story. But, you know, like, you know, kanai nahara. You know, that's the... Okay, now finally, what I wanted to... The shir on koshering won't be a shir, especially with Mrs. Kronbach here. If I didn't mention the last exceptional, whatever word you want to use, for koshering, and that is we did say that we don't kosher cheres. In general, we don't. We don't. But, you know, you can imagine you get these stories that somebody's grandmother brought over this set of china on the Mayflower, and, you know, it has tremendous sentimental value. It's been in the family for 400 generations. And, you know, believe it or not, these stories are very common, more than you could think. So, you know, it's not so easy to tell the people, well, forget it, you know. It's not so easy. So again, but in what cases this is applicable, I don't want to get into, but there is such a concept as chazara l'kivshan. Chazara means return. Kivshan means a furnace. What that mean? That means exactly what Mrs. Kronbach has, a kiln. You know, something that is really humongously, to use a halakhic term, hot. So in other words, you can imagine the idea is it gets to 2,000 degrees. So you put something back into there, nothing's going to survive in that. Except for maybe a cockroach. But
no,
you didn't even think that was funny. You didn't even like that. I should have known that. Don't tell that joke to a group of women. Anyway, so the idea is, if we're worried about something on the surface or something absorbed or whatever you're talking about, it's not going to survive in that type of heat. It's just not going to survive. So
that it's 1100 that I fire to, because that's where the gold and the silver is put on.
That's where the gold and silver what?
In a China factory, they put the gold and the silver on at 1100.
At 1100, really? So that's very hot.
It's very cool by ceramic temperatures.
By what?
By ceramic temperatures.
By ceramic temperatures. But again, that would be the concept. Now, we don't do it that often. But again, somebody who's Chozer B'Tshuva, or again, the sentimental issues, or I don't know. Again, there are extenuating, but in general, we don't kasher feras, but every rule there's an exception. So that would be the exception.
Is that because there's machlokas about whether it's effective?
No, it's just that in general, as I said before, the Torah says, Cheres, we don't kasher, right? That was the pasuk by Korban Chatos.
That's why they don't have a furnace in the base of Mikdash to...
Well, I don't know. Maybe it could have been just a practical reason. In other words, you know, like, you don't want to start kilming everything, you know, like, you know.
There also, in the ancient ceramics, there wasn't always glaze. And if there's not glaze, then it really, there's a lot more absorption.
Right.
So,
believe it or not, we see that in Halakha. There's a whole thing by Hilchos Shabbos. No, other places also, that the we just don't relate to this, but if you want to have light around the house, so you had little candles, but not necessarily paraffin or wax candles. So what did you have? You just had a little thing of oil and a wick, and you lit it. So imagine having a night light. What would be a night light? It would just be a little receptacle with a little amount of oil in it, with a wick, and then it's burning. So a lot of times what they would use is brought down the Mishnayos, is they, and in Halakha all over, is they would, you're not going to spend a lot of money for this, you know, like the little Dixie cups that we have, or the cups we use to give to the kids Kiddush, you know, like a little thing like that, and you're just having it around the house, let's say Shabbos or whenever, to give a little light before a person goes to sleep. So what are, you're not going to spend a lot of money on those things. So they were just ceramic that were not. And so we'll talk about the oil oozing out, so that I guess would happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it was not fired, if it was not glazed, if it was not anything. They talk about taking like a glob of clay and just sticking, there's such a thing called a beya. In other words, what they did, it was like an egg shape. I always think of it like Play-Doh, right? An egg shape. And just stuck your thumb into it. There's a little receptacle and you put a little oil and a wick. There's your nightlight. So you can imagine that
ceramic menorah, if it's unfired clay, you
that's
can't
right.
reuse it.
Well, right, that it's brought down on a few, but especially by Hilchos Shabbos, because it gets disgusting. Because the oil just, again, I've never seen it, I can't imagine it, maybe Mrs. Cromwell can, but it gets like nasty, as they say.
So there's something not preferred about the furnace.
Right, because again, it's a leniency. The Torah says we don't kosher ceramic.
Around.
I was thinking, instead of breaking the kale in the basement, I was thinking having another furnace
in. Yeah, but then you wouldn't have the cool miracle of seeing all the shards being sucked up. Mr. Cohen, you had a comment or something?
Yeah, you could see that in the plastic containers of olive oil.
That's right.
What do you do with the very hot glass? Don't put it on if you have one of these nice new granite counters, cold granite counters. Don't put the hot glass on the cold granite counters.
Because it will crack also. It'll crack also.
Yeah.
You mean after you take out of the hot water?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because the same thing would happen. Right.
Really,
and like I said before, we consider that, like when we're trying to decide if you could kosher something. The Rav has the right to say you can't kasher because, for whatever reason, either it has a lot of holes or it's fragile, or whatever the case may be, sometimes the Rav will say you can't kasher it. So after hearing this shir, you'll say, why not? It's metal and it's this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So a Rav sometimes has prerogative because of whatever reason, and he feels you won't kasher it well, to say you can't kasher it.
The point about granite counters, why are granite counters okay to kosher? Because granite is absorbent.
Well, it depends. I don't want to get into that because there's, it depends if there's seams or if there's grout, you know, or there's another issue some folks can bring out about the with the new counters that one sheet, you put a sealant on it, believe it or not. And so one post I spoke to said, we don't know what that sealant is. So do you consider that significant? Believe it or not, I spoke to a contractor exactly about that, about what is that sealant. And but the side issue is evidently that sealant goes away after, really when you have one of those counters, you're supposed to get resealed every couple of years. Nobody does it, I don't think. But so there's separate issues with those side issues. Okay. That's it? Yes, I'm sorry.
Is Pyrex glass?
We usually consider it glass, yeah,
so
but it's not so simple.
But it's hot. Could you do this business of heating it up in the oven and then doing Hagala on it?
Right. Where you get into an issue is other materials. I think I might touch on like Corel and Corningware and all that type of stuff. There's usually the big machlokas about can you kosher those or not. So a very big posek told me once he fills his glass. I think they'll tell you. Corel and Corningware is 90% glass and they put something else into it to make it less shatterproof. That's the whole thing of that. But this posek holds that it's 90% glass. So he holds his glass. I don't know what Pyrex is.
Pyrex is a glass. It's similar,
it's
actually, to Corel and Corningware. But Pyrex, I thought you're not allowed to kosher because it's hot glass.
I think during the year, as opposed to Pesach, we would let you kosher it. But not for Pesach.
What does that mean?
You're right.
But you cook in it. So
if
you're cooking at like 400 degrees
in
it.
If you roast in it,
right.
Wouldn't you have to do the leaf?
Right, it depends on how you do it. See, again, I'm skirting around the whole issue, and I mentioned that when you have, you're cooking something and you put a small amount of oil or margarine in it, and then you fry it or you roast it. Some machlokas is already in Shulchan Aruch about, is that considered, you have a small amount of liquid, really small amount of liquid, but would that be that you need number two or you need number three? You need Hagala? Or do you need Lieblin? Because the whole thing is about how do you get it in? Well, I had some oil, and that's a liquid. So is that considered, even though I use a frying pan, I use a liquid medium? And that would necessitate Hagala? Or is it already number three? No, that's not significant. It's like barbecuing. That's a big machlokas.
But when you're answering a shayla, do you look at it as a Pyrex pan is $5 sometimes on sale, so just go buy a new one?
Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, sometimes it depends on the family. It makes a very big difference.
Okay.
It makes a very big difference on who's asking the shayla. That's like why all the time it's a very huge advantage to know who you're talking to. Whether you could, it came up recently, though. I don't want to get into what the shayla was. That somebody from a different community called me about a certain shayla, and I asked right away. There was a rebbetzin who called me about a shayla for somebody, and I said, I don't know these people. Are they Bali Tshuva? Are they not Bali Tshuva? Are they this? Are they that? She gave me a certain answer, and therefore I gave a certain answer. And then another rebbe called me up and said, why did you give that answer? So I said, well, this is the reason why. So he said, yeah, but they're barely from. I said, well, that's not what I was told. And it would have made a big difference in my, and I explained to him why I'm passing that way. Happened to be he didn't know the shita that I was quoting, but didn't understand it. And somebody else, also another rabbi, but I pointed out an opinion that they didn't know of. And again, if I would have known, that was the problem of passing off the shelf, sort of. So people do, obviously, that doesn't mean you shouldn't call a rabbi that doesn't know you, but let's say in a kashering type of thing, almost anything, it can make a very big difference who you're referring to. A very big difference. That's Mrs. Cohn.
If you have a clay that's traced by Kavisha,
okay.
Does that have to be kashered, or can that be left?
Let's say you marinated something and you used a trace marinating sauce. Right? It was all cold. Very good. So I'm happy you brought that up. Yeah. You'd have to kosher it to Hagala. Let's do a liquid. But even though it was cold, that's right. In other words, she's bringing up a very important point, that it's, even though it was cold there, right, what do you do? You're just marinating or pickling something. But letting a solid sit in a liquid for 24 hours is considered as if it's cooked. And therefore, you'd have the kasher. That comes up because sometimes people pickle, marinate, right? They're going to have a barbecue and they marinate for, and they leave some, and then it's, it could be the whatever you marinated, the flesh that you marinated in, the sauce was milchik. Da-da, there's a problem.
If it was fish, would that be a kosher's problem?
Yeah, it would be the same problem. It's a sakana problem, so that's a bigger problem.
But it's not a question of having to actually kill it.
No, you'd have to kosher it.
Really?
Because, yeah.
So, but if
you
had a sharp taste to it, does that change
it? A dover charif?
No,
dover charif only works with if you have the push of the knife. Right, that's it's the sharpness of the food. Didn't we touch on that? Sharpness of the food. We talked about it in carne lesh, I think. Sharpness of the food coupled with the force of the knife. Those two things together wake up the taste. That's the issue there. Okay. Yashkoach, everyone.